Quality Watch is an educational production of iPro. Opinions expressed reflect the views of the speakers only and not those of any company or agency. This podcast is intended for private, non-commercial use only. Please visit iPro.org to read our full disclaimer and terms and conditions.
Welcome to Quality Watch, the podcast focused on healthcare quality improvement. Quality Watch is a production of iPro, a trusted partner of federal and state agencies working to measure and improve the quality of healthcare for all. I'm your host, Dr. Edison Machado, Senior Vice President of Strategy Solutions at iPro. In today's episode, we'll cover the growing role of artificial intelligence in healthcare, resources to support vaccination against common respiratory viruses, and some heart month statistics. But first, a few quick headlines and updates from around the nation and here at iPro. Artificial intelligence, AI for short, is finding its way into every sector of society, including healthcare. A recent report in Health Leaders Media noted that the White House and various federal agencies are trying to develop rules around the use of AI. One of the challenges they face is trying to keep up with technology that is evolving at such a rapid pace. On February 8th, the Senate Finance Committee held a hearing on AI in healthcare. Meanwhile, venture capitalists have invested an estimated $28 billion into digital health firms that are specializing in artificial intelligence, according to the Health Leaders article. The Washington Post reports that the CDC is expected to change its recommendations that people with confirmed COVID-19 stay home for 5 days. The agency is considering a recommendation that those with COVID return to work or other activities as soon as their fever resolves and their symptoms are mild or showing improvement. This change could come as early as April, according to the Post. States like California have adopted similar guidance, with results to date being inconclusive. And respiratory viruses are continuing to circulate widely, both in the community and in congregate care settings such as nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. The iPro QuinQIO has launched a microsite for providers that features tools and resources that support vaccination efforts against the most prevalent respiratory viruses, influenza, RSV, and COVID-19. The site is part of a campaign known as WAVE, which reminds providers to ask, "What about vaccines?" every time. The site includes a downloadable animated video in English and Spanish to educate the public about the pneumococcal vaccine. Feel free to visit qi.ipro.org and click on the WAVE campaign button for more information. A recent Kaiser Family Foundation article called "Do We Simply Not Care About Old People?" highlighted some disturbing facts about how older adults have fared during and since the COVID-19 pandemic. Some of the statistics cited in the piece are staggering, such as the fact that 3/4 of those who died of COVID in the U.S., or around 900,000 people, were older adults. The article also noted that during a 3-week period spanning the end of December and the beginning of January, over 4,800 seniors died of COVID, while the flu killed an additional 1,200 seniors, and respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, killed 126. Against this backdrop, vaccination rates have plummeted, and antiviral medications continue to be underutilized. Our guest today is Melanie Ronda, infection preventionist and a director in iPro's Healthcare Quality Improvement Department. Melanie is a registered nurse with 30 years of experience in a variety of healthcare settings. She was an infection preventionist in acute care and long-term care facilities and a former director of nursing in long-term care. At iPro, Melanie works on our Quality Innovation Network, Quality Improvement Organization, or QuinQIO, as the nursing home lead for New York, New Jersey, and Ohio. Welcome, Melanie. Thanks for taking the time out today to speak with us.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get started. So, Melanie, you've worked in nursing homes, and your work at iPro puts you in touch with many long-term care facilities. What are the challenges you see that these facilities are facing when it comes to protecting their vulnerable residents from COVID, influenza, or RSV?
That's a good question. One area we've been hearing a lot about is how a facility chooses which vaccine to give as the residents enter their facility. So if you have a resident and you assess them and they are due for COVID vaccine and influenza and maybe a pneumococcal vaccine, how do you choose which vaccine is the best one for the residents? Or can you vaccinate with more than one at a time? And CDC does recommend that you can vaccinate with more than one vaccine at a time, although there is some hesitation.
Well, that makes sense. I've heard that quite a bit as well. Are you seeing any differences in vaccination acceptance among the staff versus residents of the nursing homes you work with?
Yes, we are seeing quite a bit of a difference. The residents seem to accept the COVID vaccination more regularly than the staff are. Also, influenza. Some states have chosen to make influenza vaccine mandatory or mandatory declination, so they have better rates for staff vaccination. But it does depend on the state with that.
Got it. Good to know. Well, so what are some of the objections that you're hearing from folks who are, you know, choosing not to pursue vaccination, Melanie?
I think initially with the pandemic in the primary series, there was a better vaccination rate because it was new and we thought it was going to solve the pandemic. And what we're hearing is people are a little less likely to accept the updated vaccine because it has not ended the pandemic and there is still COVID circulating. We're also hearing from staff and facilities that people are feeling it's less impactful. So COVID is not putting people in the hospital the way it was initially.
Got it. No, I mean, that seems to make sense and consistent with what you hear in the media these days. You know, what we also hear in the media and have heard for quite a while is this idea of vaccination fatigue. You know, this idea that in the wake of the pandemic, people are just tired of thinking about, you know, COVID as well as vaccines. You know, how much of that is still at play, you know, with the folks you work with?
I think that's the biggest challenge, honestly. Vaccine fatigue is what we hear is the number one reason, and it results in people feeling we just had a vaccine, we're not interested in having another one. What we're learning is really taking the time to do one-to-one conversations with staff and families and residents is the best way to address the concerns. A lot of times the vaccine fatigue, there's also misinformation, and we are teaching staff and nursing homes to get ahead of the misinformation and have that one-to-one conversation.
Well, that's good advice. A question for our listeners who have a parent, a grandparent or a friend, you know, who is in a nursing home. What would you suggest to them as advice they should share with their loved ones with regard to this topic of vaccinations?
Yeah, well, when I think about the risk of being in a nursing home and being in that community environment, and it wouldn't be different if somebody was in a nursing home or in college, it's the exposure, the opportunity for exposure. So I would recommend that anyone of my loved ones who are in a nursing home get vaccinated with the updated COVID-19 vaccine, influenza, pneumococcal, certainly, and as well as RSV vaccine.
Well, that's good advice, I'm sure, for them and for the residents involved. Now, just wanted to shift gears a little bit, Melanie, and sort of, you know, get your thoughts on something we've heard recently, you know, in the media. You know, there's word that the recommendation that people stay at home for 5 days after a COVID diagnosis may be changing. It's something that's being reconsidered as guidance by the CDC. What are your thoughts on, you know, that potential change and the, you know, the outcomes that may follow such a change?
Sure, that's interesting. I think we, as a country, have known a lot about doing good precautions, hand hygiene, covering your cough, respiratory etiquette, and if in fact the change does occur, still remembering those basic infection prevention and control techniques are going to help reduce the spread.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. I mean, I think that'll be obviously a significant change if it in fact takes place. But I think your advice about sticking to those tried and true strategies, right, still will be relevant to folks. So, Melanie, what are some strategies as you work with these long-term care facilities that you might suggest to support, you know, increasing vaccination rates for residents and staff members, despite all the challenges you've mentioned thus far?
Number one, don't stop educating. Getting out there and talking to the staff and talking to the residents, being transparent about what's happening in the building. So if you're in an outbreak, making sure you're talking to the facility staff, residents, anyone who's coming in on the need for vaccine to reduce those outbreaks and the potential spread.
Great. No, that's good advice. You know, I mentioned at the top, Melanie, that, you know, vaccination rates have, you know, plummeted, but we've also continued to see underutilization of antiviral medications. So with regards to that, you know, medications like Paxlovid that help with the treatment of COVID-19 or Tamiflu to treat influenza, why do you think that underutilization continues out there in the public?
In long-term care facilities, some of it is about the way the medications need to be administered. So if certain medications can't be crushed, and then the resident may not be able to swallow it. So it needs to be an IV medication. And I think there's some hesitancy of ordering IV medication depending on what the situation is.
Oh, that's interesting. That's good to know. I mean, you know, I think we tend to forget sometimes that, you know, even the mode of transmission, right, or the way you deliver medications needs to be thought out as, you know, a factor when considering whether or not folks will use it or not. So that's good for folks, the listeners to hear. You know, just sort of stepping back, Melanie, a bit, I just wanted to ask you, what, if anything, about the work you do day in and day out sort of keeps you up at night these days?
It really is how COVID has impacted healthcare as a whole and the encouragement of getting people vaccinated. It does matter. COVID vaccine has made a difference. It has changed the course of COVID-19 impact for the elderly. So how, just coming up with the plan and how we could actually impact our staff and residents and families that are non-conformers to the vaccine.
So Melanie, you know, you live and breathe vaccinations. You know, what's the latest and greatest, I guess, when it comes to vaccines these days?
Yes, the RSV vaccine became available in the fall of 2023, and it is recommended for those over the age of 60 with clinical decision-making with your provider. And those residents that are in long-term care automatically should be reviewed for appropriateness of RSV just by essence of living in long-term care.
Okay, good, good. And I mean, what keeps you optimistic? I mean, what are the bright silver linings out there, I guess, that sort of make coming into work and continuing this work sort of make you think that, you know, there's a path forward?
Well, we have seen a decline in the severity of illness related to COVID-19. So all of the efforts that everyone has made over the last 3 years has made an impact. So that is making you feel like there's a path forward. And just in general, the highlighting of infection prevention and control over the last 3 years and that in the shift of the importance has been a great movement for me as an infection preventionist to see suddenly the IEPs are important in all of the healthcare settings.
Well, yeah, I think that should go without being said. I mean, I think a lot of folks around the country would agree with me in saying that, you know, folks like yourself have been invaluable really to everyone, particularly the residents in long-term care facilities throughout the pandemic. And so if you don't hear it enough, you know, I'll definitely be the one to tell you that, you know, your work is very well appreciated.
Thank you.
So Melanie, what else are you and your team doing to help encourage providers to really promote the need for vaccinations with long-term care and nursing home residents these days?
We've been working on a campaign called the WAVE campaign, What About Vaccine at Every Time or Every Encounter, to encourage providers that every time someone enters the healthcare arena, that they are asked about vaccines and offered vaccines or provided a way to get vaccinated. Don't miss the opportunities.
Well, thank you again, Melanie, for the time you've taken here to help our listeners better understand the state of vaccinations today.
Thank you for having me. This was a wonderful conversation.
For folks who want more information, please feel free to visit the website qi.ipro.org, or you can take a peek at our notes for more information regarding Melanie's work today.
It's time for us to crunch some numbers in our Data Watch portion of the program. February is American Heart Month, so let's take a look at some statistics around heart disease. There's good news to report. The National Center for Health Statistics says that the age-adjusted prevalence of heart disease in adults age 18 and over decreased from 6.2% in 2009 to 5.5% in 2018. And no surprise here, adults 75 and over have the highest prevalence of heart disease among adults. Now let's talk a little bit about CPR. It was back in 1878 that researchers first discovered that chest compressions could keep the blood circulating after a cardiac event. But it took until 1959 for the technique to be used on humans. And while many people believe that CPR is highly successful in saving lives, the reality is that the rate of survival for bystander-initiated CPR is only about 10%, while survival after CPR administered in a hospital is about 17%. The use of an automatic external defibrillator, or AED, along with CPR, increases survival to more than 30%. The NIH estimates that 1,700 lives per year are saved because of the use of an AED. That's it for this episode of Quality Watch. I'm Dr. Edison Machado, and on behalf of iPro, thank you for listening. To learn more, visit our website at ipro.org. That's ipro.org. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to leave us a comment and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We will be back next month with more. Until then, we'll be working on better healthcare realized.